Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We're doing our doomed franchises draft today throughout the day. One of them could potentially be the Winnipeg Jets. Let's talk to it with our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Frank Saravelli, hockey insider and president of hockey content at the Daily Faceoff. Are we going to have a Saskatoon Jets appearance in the near future?
It's an interesting question. I was surprised to see the fan reaction be so mixed on social media. Certainly that's the temperature that the Winnipeg Jets were trying to take when they offered up that same question to season ticket holders in a survey that went out recently. And I got to say, I'm surprised in the sense that if games are being played in your city with no fans and you can give your team some support and a hometown voice on the prairies in Saskatoon, if there's no fans where you are, why do you care where if it's being played somewhere else with fans? All you can do is watch it anyway. So a little bit surprised in the reaction from fans. It seemed to be very mixed, that fans felt like they were being taken advantage of here. But in this case, you can't go to the game anyway.
So how would this even work? And is there's no precedent really set for a team deciding mid-season to move to a different province? In case you had missed it, the Winnipeg Jets were asking season ticket holders if they'd be, you know, interested or okay with it. What would the details be? Is there a timeline on this? And like maybe how realistic do you think this is?
Well, it's all hypothetical because for the first part is Saskatchewan at this point, it does not have restrictions on indoor sports venues, which would be the key. And you know, part of the thing is like there isn't a whole ton of things going on in Saskatoon other than junior hockey and the occasional lacrosse game. So, you know, they really haven't had a need to. If the NHL were to come knocking, does that change the mind of the government? Would they still be okay with that in that case? And then if so, you know, how long are the Jets coming for? What's the time frame? How quickly would they be getting there? All those things, all those questions remain unanswered. And it was really more of just a question that the Jets wanted to take the temperature of their fan base. But in this case, you know, what's interesting to me is what's the ripple effect around Canada with the other six NHL franchises. And so I had checked in last night with the league after seeing Elliott's report. And I asked the question, since there's no other Canadian province that has the same type of ability to move there without restrictions, does this mean that there are some other Canadian teams that are considering options in the United States on a temporary basis? And the answer that I got was no, not at the moment. So it seems like this is the Jets trying to be creative, trying to think outside the box here and potentially do something a little different. And I can't blame them. When you have an $81.5 million payroll and you need to make that payroll, you're trying to generate any kind of revenue that you can to avoid shelling money out of pocket. And in addition to that, as I mentioned, it's a competitive thing. If you were to have some fans in your building in Saskatoon that are cheering for your team, the environment is way better for the game, way better for the team, way better for people watching at home as well in terms of the product. So I don't see any downsides other than the heavy lifting that would be involved to pull something like that off. We'll see if it happens. I'm not convinced. I think it's much less than a 50-50 shot at this point, but it's interesting to think about.
Frank, you are a national hockey reporter, so you can watch whatever games you want on a night-in, night-out basis. And here's my guess. You don't choose to watch the ones where there's no fans in the seats because you know why? It sucks. It sucks to watch. It's brutal. Having watched these last two Leafs games, you don't get to escape because you're reminded that of the state of the pandemic. You're reminded of the state of your restrictions as a province. But two is this is a game that the players need to feed off of emotions, and empty rinks just don't work. I can't even believe we awarded a Stanley Cup to a team in a bubble now in hindsight. I'm like, I don't really even feel all that comfortable rewarding Tampa Bay as back-to-back Stanley Cup champions. It's more like a 1.5 kind of thing. But either way, I can't understand the logic of a fan that wouldn't want their team to play in front of a full barn. I just cannot understand it at all. What I want to key in on, though, is what you said there about not yet, that little part about it, not yet. How frustrated is the league with Canada right now? Because I've often complained that the NHL doesn't give Canada enough respect for what they do for that league, that it's often overlooked from marketing standpoints. They kind of always looked at Canada as, well, we've already got you. You know, you're our safety school. We don't need to worry about you. We don't need to shine the attention on you. We're going to make salary caps that don't work for you, all kinds of different stuff. But right now, I just have to imagine that the league office is looking at this country and saying, oh my God, how this is untenable. Like, you're killing us here when it comes to money. We know it's a pandemic. We understand that there are reasons in place for some of these things. But, man, they're a business at the end of the day. And you talk about the money that they're losing every single time the Leafs open up. Just the Leafs. It's almost $4 million a game. Like, the league has to be going bonkers over this.
Yeah, I don't think they're very happy. Of course, they're not going to say that publicly, but I think they look potentially at some of these restrictions and say maybe they're overkill in a sense, not to steal a line from Connor Hellebuyck. But, you know, I think they probably look at the games that are being played south of the border and they say, okay, well, we don't see or we haven't gotten any reports of mass outbreaks coming from fans in the stands at arenas elsewhere around the league, some of whom don't even have the same restrictions that were in place, including, you know, masking obligations and things like that, that fans here in the U.S. are no less safe in terms of putting the game on. And so, you know, why can't we do this at least, at the very least at a 50% capacity? Like, I think that would be a positive compromise, but going – no, it's not just no fans, or it wasn't just 50%. It was also no concessions. Like, that was the big killer for revenue that they were like, yeah, well, come on. Like, we just have no chance to make any money. $14 beers really add up. All that stuff that goes into a home revenue gate, like, how much is the NHL, how bad of a spot does it put them in? The fact that they're taking games away and moving them, saying, we hope we have a chance to play them again later in the season when there is meaningful revenue. So it's certainly been a thorn in the NHL's side. There's no question about that. But I would say, in response to some of your other points, the NHL, by that same virtue, knows where their bread is buttered. They know how significant of a revenue source Canadian hockey is for the league, and that's not lost on anyone. So this, you know, I'd say the chunk of the Canadian teams are the NHL's vast performers in terms of home gates. Toronto, Montreal, Edmonton has some of the highest ticket prices in the league. You know, those teams and Vancouver, when they're good, all like top seven revenue drivers in the league. So they're incredibly important in terms of the overall league business, and that's not lost on anyone, trust me.
Yeah, the Leafs, 8 of their next 9 now after the schedule juggling, 8 of their next 9 on the road heading into that kind of Olympic period where we expect a lot of makeup games. Sticking with the Leafs, they waived Nick Ritchie yesterday, partially a cap move to try to create some space to get Liljegren back and massage a problem that we knew was coming eventually. Frank, I guess I'll start with, do you see any potential for Ritchie to be claimed, or is he likely going to clear here?
I don't. I was talking about this yesterday with a few other executives around the league, and the big issue is the term. It's the next year on the deal. I think someone might be interested to, you know, plug him into a third line role somewhere, you know, potentially at $2.5 million for the remainder of this season. Almost half the season's already been played. So it isn't a real significant ask. It's really the term for next year that's gotten in the way. And so I really don't see him being claimed. I think there's a very low chance of that happening. But, you know, I think in a lot of ways, for all the really good signings that the Leafs had last summer, and you look at Bunting and Kampf and go down the list of guys that have really worked out quite well, it felt like from the second that deal was signed that Nick Ritchie in a lot of ways was a square peg in a round hole for this team in terms of what he brought. And I never really understood the term. Like, if you want to give him the deal, sure, $2.5 million, go out and earn it and try it. I mean, I don't know. To me, this one didn't make a lot of sense from the start, and it's come back to bite them in a way, but they'll at least get some cap savings if they're able to send him down to the Marlies, and then who knows? You know, it's easy to say never to be heard from again, but that's, we all know in the NHL with injuries, with COVID, that's probably not the case.
Yeah, if he ends up clearing, I would guess that he ends up playing for the Leafs again because of those scenarios that you just outlined. But yeah, that extra year of term does make it difficult to swallow as someone who's just an observer. You always wonder, like, okay, well, who are you betting against and why wouldn't that be a deal breaker for you for a player of that caliber? But I'm curious, Frank, if the Leafs wanted to trade him, if they really just wanted to get that number off the books, they wanted to be done with this, what kind of an asset do you think that they would have to attach to Richie to send him to a team that would be basically working, I'm guessing, as a cap haven?
An asset that probably isn't worth giving up. I mean, the way the cap works with the $1.25 million that you can get by sending him to the minors, that it's just easier to do that, chop it in half there and leave him there, because that'd really be a lot of the savings you'd get, unless you're getting someone to take him at full bore. But even then, $1.25 million, it's significant, but it's not significant enough to warrant an asset, I think, at this point.
Okay. So you have your, I think it's top 20. I don't have it in front of me yet. 20 trade targets in play as the market heats up on Daily Faceoff right now. A lot of pretty interesting names. I wonder if you have, let's start with this. If any of those names you believe we could be talking about being linked to the Toronto Maple Leafs a month from now.
I really think that the way the Leafs are positioned at this point, the way that they've played as consistent as they've been, I don't view the Leafs that are really in the market for anything this trade deadline season. And easy to say now, we're a few, 74 days ahead of it at the moment. And there's a lot that could happen between now and then, specific with regard to injury. But I look at the swing that they took last year, and I think my guess in sizing that up and how it worked out was there was probably some trepidation within Leafs management about, hey, how do we approach this deadline? We have this team that's cruising along, that's in a good spot in the North. We really have this opportunity, just win our division and it gets us to the conference final. You know, we think we're in a good place. Let's go out and swing big. And the price paid for Nick Foligno, a first and 2 fourths, man, that hurt. And I don't want to say that that makes the Leafs gun shy this time around, but I think you look at the addition that Nick Foligno made, and it was like, well, unless you can get someone that's way over the top, how much is that one player really going to make a difference and help our team? Is it really worth the capital that we expended in order to make something like that happen? And I think the answer resoundingly is no, at least at the moment, given the lack of holes that present themselves. But at the same time, you know, I think the trepidation came in that, how will the market react? How will the marketplace react if we don't do anything? Mm-hmm. And I think they see the reaction from fans after the fact being like, why did we do that for Foligno? That it impacts this time around. So my guess and my thought is that the Leafs don't do very much. They're convening, I believe, over the weekend and into next week with their pro and amateur scouting meetings out west in the U.S. And I think at that point, they're going to be setting their list. They're going to be looking over the group of players that are available, and they're going to come to a determination, hey, this is the guys that we might be interested in targeting. But I still think at the end of the day that not a lot happens on the Leafs front.
Well, I got to tell you, too, when I was looking at your top 20 trade targets, which, again, is on dailyfaceoff.com right now, I didn't see any name that jumped off the page to me where I went, wow, I would really want the Leafs to sacrifice major assets to go get that player. Maybe the market changes a bit. Maybe something else develops. But the only thing that I could see, or that makes sense to me anyways as of right now, Frank, is you have Justin Hall listed in your honorable mentions or other names to keep an eye on that you didn't put off the board, is the way that you phrased it. Justin Hall.
Yeah, I took him off the board from the last time I did it. That's all.
Right. So he's off the board. And I wonder, okay, so is he off the board because you think that he's not likely to be moved, or is he off the board because of his stock and the difficulty to move him? Because I would think that the only reason that you're, you know, making a move of consequence where you're trading a draft pick or you're doing something is if you can get out from Justin Hall and you can find a way to actually add an impact defenseman that gives you depth, that fits that need for, you know, right side, top four, maybe somebody eats a little bit of cash or a bit of the salary cap hit to make it work, takes Justin Hall. That's the sort of trade that I think a lot of Leaf fans maybe envision. Where are you at right now with Justin Hall in terms of his market, his availability, and, yeah, just Toronto's interest in trading him?
Here's the problem. That player that you just described, I don't think is readily available and or – you know, potentially available. And I think if that player were to pop up, the Leafs might be interested in doing something. But as it stands at the moment, they actually need Justin Hall. Like, there's such a limited market for defense. I mean, you even look at the board that we were just talking about. You have, you know, Ben Chiarot on the left side. You've got a real impact player in Jacob Chychrun who's going to cost a ton to get. He's also on the left side, and then on the rental market, it's really kind of thin. Nick Leddy, left side, you know, Calvin DeHaan, left side. No one's really getting you that excited. That's where things stand at the moment in terms of the market. There will be other names that pop up here and there, but I think the Leafs are faced with this proposition: is okay, so we move Justin Hall, and we could get something pretty decent for him, probably because of the lack of options out there. Are we really going to go with Alex Biega as our seventh? What kind of spot does that put our team in? Should we have another injury? And we would need to press Biega into action on a regular basis. So you take advantage of the market and move a Justin Hall, which you could do over the summer anyway when you're able to better fill that gap. Or do you just hang with things as they are for now and just say, you know what? No reason to create another hole by moving him and taking advantage in the market. We're probably better off just staying with what we have. And that's the way I'd assess it at the moment.
Well, we're 74 days away from the NHL trade deadline, and hopefully we're kind of out of the COVID roster situation, so we can finally get to see some of these names and what they'll bring to the lineup. Thanks so much for joining us today, Frank. And we'll catch up down the road when we have a little bit more juice with trades.
Yeah, sounds good, guys. Have a good one. Thanks.
See you, Frank.
Frank Saravelli, hockey insider and president of hockey content at Daily Faceoff. And you can check out that draft rankings, trade targets that he has up there, and see where your player that you'd be most interested is laying. And that insider was brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com.
You know what I thought was most shocking?
How far away the NHL trade deadline is compared to the NBA trade deadline?
That was number two. The most shocking thing about Frank's list is that Dylan Strome is only 24 years old. I don't know how that's possible. I feel like I've been watching Dylan Strome my whole life. Like, when I was a kid in high school, I was using Dylan Strome. I was watching him play for the World Juniors. Like, how is Dylan Strome 24? That makes no sense to me. Dylan Strome is 24? What? And then the 72 days away. When you said 72 days away, I was like, till the season is done. Season 74 days until it's all wrapped up and we're going on summer holiday. 74 days till the deadline. My God.
So the NHL has historically had like a later trade deadline than the NBA, even though they start a little earlier. And I understand that the Olympic break bumped things back, but the NBA trade deadline is in a month. The NHL one is in like 2.5 months. That gap feels so enormous now. Hey, at least for content, it spreads those things out a little bit. But it honestly makes me think that it's not that the NHL's trade deadline is too late. It's that the NBA one is maybe a little too early.
See, I think that two things can be true. But I like that the NHL one is late as a content creator, because here's the deal. In sports radio and in covering a team, once the deadline has passed and your team is what it is, and especially for a group like the Leafs where it all comes down to the playoffs, it's going to get a little tight narrative-wise and discussion-wise around that team. So the ramp up to the deadline, you have stories to talk about. It can be, even if it's someone that's a depth target or whatever, this is the market where people care about stuff like that. I almost swore. My God. This Friday, whoopsies. This market cares about depth players, right? If you get a seventh defenseman on the Toronto Maple Leafs, this fan base cares about that deeply. Deeply. Maybe even more about Austin Matthews. They would tune in and go, tell us about that 7th D more about than Austin Matthews snipping 50 goals. After that, it's going to be a desert. It's going to be the take desert. Barring an injury, barring a thing, I don't know what you're supposed to really say with the Leafs stretch run. You're just hoping for them to make it there healthy. You're just hoping to have some meaningful games. So I love that it's late. NBA is too early, though. I'm sorry. The NBA is way too early. Like, how are you supposed to know what you are? Like, even I think about the Raptors. Do you feel good with maybe you do with the Raptors, but another month knowing which direction they should go in? Like, I don't know. Feels kind of difficult. It feels a little too early for the NBA to be doing that, especially since, you know what else? Sorry, I know I'm going on too long. It just gives you so much runway to tank and be awful, you know, those teams that decide to trade. God, so you're going to tell me that from February 7th onward in the NBA season, you're going to trade your pieces and get even worse at basketball? Like, oof, that's rude. That's rude to the fan base. Make them string it out. Make them string out those assets. Do better by those franchises. I think that's a good way to say that we'll continue those hopeless franchise rankings, which you guys keep trying to rebrand on me by calling the doom threat. Like, please stop. This is my, I've been doing this for years and you guys have rebranded me. You
put it in the text in our chat that it was called doomed. So
no, hopeless. Franchise rankings.
I'll change
in
it.
In Ailish's defense, it's in the doc. One says hopeless and one says doomed.
Yeah, so one is written by me, the creator of the hopeless franchise rankings, okay? Doomed is different. Doomed is Cleveland Browns number
one. The inventor of the burrito, the inventor of the hopeless franchise ranking, the inventor of sports radio, more of the J.D. Bucket show than the Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590, The Fan.
Okay, it's Blake Sox Scored Friday. This is a great... I've heard this before. This is T.I. And we were talking during the break about how we both had... Well, actually, I don't know if you... Did you say you had a real dalliance with T.I.? Because I loved T.I. for a stretch. Okay,
Oh, yeah.
We said it doesn't hold up, but it's one of those things, like, T.I. doesn't hold up as well as some other hip-hop artists over time. But yet I heard that, and I heard that old school, and I went, nah, you know what? I'm wrong. I still like T.I. I still stand for T.I. I felt that little bit of a beat. I felt it. I'm back in on T.I. So what a great start. All we do is parlay. Again, it's Blake Sox Scored Friday. You follow Blake Murphy on Spotify. You can get all the tracks from today. And all the tracks from every Ox Scored Friday. Ailish Forfar wouldn't name names as to who broke our Wake and Rake parlay this week. I'm just going to say this, Ailish. Like, you seemed a little discombobulated this morning. You came in. I told you to save it. But you wore this one. You were mad in the group chat last night. You came in sort of sour this morning before the show on the Zoom. Are you okay? Are you all right?
Yeah, I just feel like I really let everybody down last night.
You did.
The Knicks come back from a 25-point deficit to win on a buzzer beater by RJ Barrett. Mm-hmm. And, like, the emphasis of Bing Bong have never been higher. Then the Tampa Bay Lightning obviously cash in against the Flames. And my Florida Panthers were up. They were up. Mm-hmm. Okay? Things were good. I could have cashed out my bet, but I trusted them. Then Sergei Bobrovsky literally comes out of his net like he thinks he's a forward to play the puck. The Dallas Stars tie it up, and it just goes downhill from there. They lose, obviously, in a shootout. I just feel sick to my stomach. I lost everybody money. You know, I just feel embarrassed to be a part of this show at times that I'm giving gambling advice to you guys. So, yeah, I'm feeling it today. What?
Okay, I'm gonna try to pick you up here a little bit. So, first of all, on Wednesday, you got yours, and JD and I both missed. So we're all even.
It's a roller coaster.
We're all even over the last 2 days. You're your picks in the Wake and Rake have gone 6-4 with two games that got canceled. So for whatever reason, you're the cancel.
Yeah,
you're the cancel person. But no,
we'll
in the last
cancel culture,
like,
Eilish.
Yeah, you're 5-2 in your last seven. Shake it off. Mm-hmm. You've been on a more than fine run. Shake it off. You're good. You'll hit one today, and then it'll be.
It just
all back
sucks when it's the first two hit, and then you're the last one waiting, and you're like, oh god, it's on me, and then they blow it.
I picked the under in Miami Portland on Wednesday, and I was really glad that JD's lost because, like, I just didn't want to stay up and watch the rest of that game.
Yeah.
But if our Wake and Rake hinged on it, I absolutely would have.
Well, Eilish, I think you're especially frustrated because you've been those two losses Blake outlined. They were both losses that cost the parlay, the trifecta,
yes,
and they were both times where favorite hockey teams blew leads. Yeah, so it's one of those that feels snake bit. You think twice with two of the best teams in hockey, the Avalanche and the Panthers, against cellar dweller franchises, which is what, the Blackhawks and Stars?
The Stars, woof.
Right. You'd think two times with those two goal advantages that you'd pull out at least one win, and not having them both. I get the frustration. I also get the frustration because I talk to this person in a group chat and I bet with this person every single week. It's Cool Bet Chris Abbott. What's up, buddy? How are we doing today, pal? Oh, he's not there yet. He's not. Just trash him. He is the, of course,
he's scared to show his face around these parts.
He's the national brand manager for Cool Bet. So, you know what? While we wait for Chris, let's just start with this. Let's start with the sport. Oh, Blake, you got something.
Well, I was just going to say he's no-showed here because last week he came on in this spot and added a fourth leg to our Wake and Rake parlay that wasn't a line that existed. So he's maybe doing some extra research over on Cool Bet, making sure his pick this week
He's completely forgotten that that gambling exists now that there's darts on the board. Vic is texting me about potentially having his wrong number. Okay. So let's start with this. Let me just ask you guys. What is the NFL game that stuck out to you the most as I text Vic potentially Chris's number? What is the line you liked the most?
Eilish, do you want to go ahead?
Sure. Let me just pull them up. I wasn't ready with them. He's just sewering us here.
No, that's okay. I can go while you look it up if you like.
Yeah.
You know, at this point in the season, it's a lot of like, who do these games matter for, right? Mm-hmm. Like we're trying to find teams that still have something to play for. And obviously the NFL is competitive enough and random enough that you still get these scenarios where an underdog team wants to, you know, tick off the other team. The Jaguars want to beat the Colts because they're a division rival and they can muck stuff up. But for the most part, you want teams that still have something to play for legitimately. So there are a bunch of short road dogs this week, which is obviously something we've been hitting a lot. But most of those don't really have a lot on the line. The one that sticks out, and I'm not super thrilled about it because I think the Rams are good, but the 49ers have a bit more to play for, and they're +4.5 at the Rams. So they hit our criteria of, hey, about 2/3 of short road dogs are winning. They hit our criteria of something to play for. The Rams, obviously, they stand to benefit from a win, but they're not bumped out of here if they lose. So that's the one that stood out to me a little bit off the top.
I actually like that pick. I've ridden with them a lot this season. I just think that they're a competent football team, and I think that the Rams just in general sort of they're a public team, right? Like they're just a public team. They've always had the known offense. They went out and got a splashy quarterback play this year. McVay, I think, has always been a little bit of an overrated figure. I know the team is what, 12-4, but actually that can't be right. But either way, I just have never really bought into that team this year. And I look at the matchup and I think that it's a good one. Eilish.
Yeah, they are 12-4, by the way. Sorry.
They are.
The Packers and Lions line? Packers -3.5? What? That's surprising to me.
Well, I think it has to do with the fact that we don't know how much of the game Aaron Rodgers is going to play.
But so that's pretty close against the Lions.
I know, it's just that Jordan Love looked so bad when he played, and you got to figure that if Aaron Rodgers comes out, everybody's coming out, and they really aren't playing for anything at all. Even still, I thought the same thing. I kind of like the Packers too. I think that if Aaron Rodgers even plays like the first half, that they
yeah, they're going to get up that much. I hope
so. Packers are bizarrely +1.5 first half spread.
Yeah, see, that I like a lot.
That seems that like a better really play like than the -3.5 outright to me.
But this just feels like Vegas knows something that we don't know. You know, this is one of the buck the trend.
One series and out.
Yes, exactly. This feels like one of those I'm terrified to bet it in some ways because it shouldn't be that way. Like +1.5 first half spread is an outrageous line for a team that's supposed to be starting Aaron Rodgers. Our buddy Cool Bet Chris is there now. We actually got his right number. We don't get to blame Chris.
Oh,
unfortunately.
Sorry.
I know. It would have been so much more fun to blame Chris. Like
I'm
always
do it
like
anyway.
Yes. Yeah. Cool Bet Chris, my guy, my teammate on the Circa picks contest, and of course, national manager for Cool Bet. What's up, bro?
Hey guys, how you doing? Yeah, I guess my old number crept into the system, which is weird, but hey, it's yeah, whatever. All good. We're here now.
So we just did our what sticks out to us bets this weekend in the NFL. So this is how we usually do our Circa Picks contest, is that Chris, myself, Pat Gregoire, and Justin Bourne, we usually end up firing up a group chat. Chris will send out all the lines for our Circa contest, and we'll look at it from, like, what is the line that pops? And then let's sort of deep dive into why the line might be that way. That is usually the process of this thing. So, Chris, for you this weekend, what line popped?
There's a couple I like, the Patriots and the Colts. Those are the two that really stood out to me. I don't think you can give the Jags enough points right now. Like, that is just an absolute tire fire. And, you know, if Jonathan Taylor starts running the ball, I mean, they're up 14-0 before this game even starts, I think. So, that's a line that I'm interested in. Like the Jags up to like 24, I think is like, maybe that's when I start thinking about taking them. They've been that bad.
I don't know how to feel about it. I said earlier that it's one of those games where if they end up losing, the Colts end up losing, there's so many fascinating implications that happen for the NFL that I just have my conspiracy radar up for that game. You know, I don't want to touch it because I'm just afraid. The Patriots one to me is really interesting because I don't see how Tua's supposed to move the ball against that defense. And now that Miami is sort of defeated, normally they've been that, this is a matchup, right? Like week 17, Patriots versus Dolphins. The Dolphins are always plucky in this game. They always seem to have Belichick's number. And yet, this actually means something for the Patriots. They're the better coach team. They're the better offense. They're the better defense. Like, it actually feels as though the line is a little short just based on reputation. And normally when I go with that, I try to say, hey, actually eliminate the ghosts. This is Bill Belichick that we're talking about here. I kind of like the Pats too, even though historically this hasn't been a very good spot for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think it's a little bit different. Like, I think all the QAnon conspiracists are kind of a little bit quiet the last couple of weeks because he's been dreadful. And again, I talked about it before, the fact, and this just sticks out to me like something unbelievable, the fact that he's only got one passing touchdown from outside the 11-yard line. It's like, what is this? What is this? And yeah, I think the Patriots roll here. And yeah, they've still got plenty to play for.
Yeah, so my one concern here would be that the Patriots play at 4:00. So they'll know a little bit about how much this game means to them by the time they take the field. And I don't mean to say that there's nothing on the line. Like, they'll still prefer the 5 seed to the 6 seed or the 7 seed. But I don't know that the foot is on the gas quite as much. Say Bills, Titans, and Chiefs have all won. Then, you know, getting home field is off the table for them. So there's just like, there's a little, well, I guess Bills play at 4:00 too, so they wouldn't know that one for sure.
Right.
But there is a little bit of potential of, hey, maybe you, because they need the Bills to lose and they need the Chiefs and Titans to lose if they're going to get home field. So there could just be a little smaller stakes by the time 4:00 rolls around.
I don't think this one's about home field though, Blake. I really don't. I think that they've already probably accepted in their minds that home field is a very, very long shot, that this is more about seeding. And if I'm them, I don't want to face the Bills in round one. I just don't. I do not want to face Buffalo. Josh Allen just kicked their asses. And maybe, Belichick. There's some people that have put this out there, and I won't put it past him because it's Bill Belichick, that he left some things off the table because he didn't want to show his full hand to Buffalo in what was more of a meaningless game. And yet I feel like that's a hard one for me to sell on, the way that Josh Allen played in that football game and the fact that New England really did have an opportunity to stomp on Buffalo's neck and beat them twice and sort of demoralize them and take away any hope that Buffalo had to beat them this year. I just don't buy that narrative. Maybe in the second half there was a little bit of a let up at some point in that game where they didn't go all up, but either way, I don't think they want to face the Bills. I think they want to finish higher up. I think they want to win this game. I like them to beat the Dolphins. I don't think even it's about just the home field advantage. I think they know that's a pipe dream. I'm with you, Chris. I'm locking in New England in this one. I'm certainly using New England as a parlay piece on the money line. I love them this week.
Yeah, I mean, and let's be honest, it's really, really hard to pick from. There's so much flux when it comes to rosters and when it comes to, you know, records and who's in and who's out and who cares and who doesn't. And in most sports, you're like, yeah, well, they're all motivated. They all want to win. But the NFL, especially in week 18, if it's all over, like, it's a dangerous sport. And a lot of times people and teams gear down. So to be honest, like, it's not good for business, but I would recommend just kind of passively watching this week, or maybe some player props if you see, you know, something that's not kind of aligned when you know a guy's going to get more snaps or whatever. But I just think it's really tough to be confident about much this week.
So to me, this is one where you just stay away from games that have absolutely zero meaning. Like, you don't bet the Bears and Vikings this weekend. Just don't do that. Like, don't bet Bears versus Vikings. Do not bet Washington football team versus New York Giants, okay? There are certain games here where you cannot, although I kind of do like Washington. there are some of these games that I say, this is your own fault. This is a buyer beware. This is your kind of, I usually, Chris, we have this metric, right, that we use between you and I, which is, can you look yourself in the mirror if you lose this money, right? Because that's so much of sports betting. Can you look at yourself after and say, hey, you know what? I played the right side of this. Like, the other night, I took Antonio Brown over in receiving yards. I've done that 8 times now. Deontay Johnson, I took over in receiving yards. He got 15 targets. 15! And he didn't hit the over prop. And I looked myself in the mirror that morning and I said, it's okay. It was Matt Damon. It's not your fault. It was Good Will Hunting. It's not your fault. I am not at fault for this happening. He got 15 targets. It's your fault if you bet on some of these games this weekend, okay? Like, it's your fault. I will say this. I think that I really like that Green Bay first half spread. I also like the Chiefs to beat the brakes off of the Denver Broncos. Like, what are we doing here? It's a good defense, and the Chiefs are actually still playing for something. And what, we're going to bet on Drew Lock? We're going to bet on that Broncos team that's completely playing for nothing? 11 points now is where the line has moved to on Coolbet. I think that it opened at 10. This is a no-brainer for me. Lay the points with the Chiefs. They're going to lay the smack down in this game.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to pick one side of that, that's where I'd go. I mean, the Broncos have just totally stalled. Remember they were, like, quasi-competitive to start the year? That's a long, long time ago. And the Chiefs have been hitting their stride. Like, the Chiefs, since about, you know, week 12, 13, I guess, maybe a little bit earlier, have just been the Chiefs that we expected them to be. Like, they started the season slow, but, I mean, that's a long, long ago history right now.
No.
They've been really good.
No, the Chiefs are fine, and it's just like, you know why the Broncos were competent is because they had Teddy Bridgewater, who at least can play the position at the NFL level. Drew Lock can't. Drew Lock's not an NFL quarterback. Drew Lock versus Patrick Mahomes, and there's a line that's less than 16, is outrageous to me. So, yes, I am hammering the Chiefs. That is my favorite bet of the NFL weekend. I'm locking that one in. Chiefs minus 10 is what it opened at. I don't care. I'll still play it at the 11. Ailish, do you have your wake and rake for today? Are we ready to wake and rake?
I feel
you don't have it, Blake.
I do have it. I do have it, but I think it's Raptors on the spread.
What's the line?
Minus 11 over the Jazz.
So some context here: the Jazz, as of right now,
they look
have
trash.
7 players.
Right. They might not even play. So there's my cancellation disclaimer.
Yeah, you can hit your cancel. No, they have 4 people. four players who are questionable, and they only need one of those to actually play to for the game to go on. And honestly, because they didn't sign an extra 10-day hardship exception,
I would think if
they tried to pull the all four of our questionable guys who traveled to Toronto are out, I think the league would be like, okay, well, guess what? You're dressing one of them and just don't play them. Because there's nothing that says you have to play all eight guys, just that you have to have eight dressed. So they're missing Gobert, Ingles, Conley, Bogdanovich, Donovan Mitchell, and then they have Jordan Clarkson, Rudy Gay, Royce O'Neal, Hassan Whiteside, all questionable. This team has, like, they're going to start Udoka Azubuike at center in this game. They do not have players left. 11.5 is a big spread, but the Raptors are at home. They've been playing well. They have nobody of note other than Utah on the injury report. I mean, a double-digit line's always tough in basketball.
You could tease it if you wanted, but...
Yeah. No, Ailish, like I'm putting the house on this.
Ailish. Yeah, the Utah Jazz, like if all four of those guys who are questionable are out, like, I might be the eighth man for the Utah Jazz tonight because they have to sign someone who can clear protocols in time.
Should we not look at the under in that game then if they've got no players and the total is at 222 points?
No, you know why? Because this is what happened when the Raptors played in this game. The Raptors played the Cleveland Cavaliers, and they lost by, what, 50 points? That game definitely went over. And it's because, guess what? Guys want to feast, guys want to get theirs, and guys want to score. And if you're the Toronto Raptors, your offense has actually looked pretty good lately. Fred VanVleet's trying to make an all-star game. Pascal Siakam has been averaging a ton of points. OG Anunoby wants to get his touches. Scottie Barnes wants to win Rookie of the Year. Like, Gary Trent Jr. is a man who loves to take a shot. The Raptors' offense is competent. I don't think that they'll lay up in this game. I think that they'll probably want to get some revenge league-wide for what happened to them in that Cleveland game. I love Toronto here, Ailish. This is an amazing pick. I'm all in on this. I bet so much on Cleveland to bet on the Raptors, and my one regret was I can't believe I didn't put more. I can't believe I didn't bet more because this was a no-brainer. The Raptors had no one. There are more NBA players with Utah than there were with the Raptors. Like, Jordan Clarkson is actually a guy, right? That's a real NBA player. Even Hassan Whiteside, as much as I don't like him, that's a real NBA player. So if those four play, Rudy Gay, who is the other? Royce O'Neal? Those four guys are actually pretty decent. But I got to wonder what the bench situation is, the minute situation. It's just like, that's an atrocious one. The Raptors are going to kick the living crap out of them tonight. This is a no-brainer bet.
Yeah, so in terms of the over-under, my concern would be, yes, the example of when the Cavs hung 144 on the Raptors in this same situation. Mm-hmm. The Jazz just gave up 109 to a pretty banged-up Nuggets team that's been a little underwhelming. And they started four guys in that game who won't play in this one. Like, that's how deep we're digging. Eric Pascal, Trent Forrest, Malik Fitz, Elijah Hughes, Jared Butler, Udoka Azubuike. Those are six of their rotation players for this game. So,
well, you guys have talked me into the Raptors. I'm in.
Yeah. Okay, JD, what are you putting on the Wake and Rake?
Oh, I thought you said, what are you putting on the Raptors? I was like, let's just put it this way. Ailish loves her segment of just $5. It won't just be $5. I'm chucking ducks. I'm chucking mad ducks on this game, Toronto Raptors. God, I really want to take the Raptors now. That's such a sexy pick. I'm almost like outraged. Everything else looks ugly to me now because we have this Toronto Raptors pick. I got to tell you. I'm assuming that there's no Giannis Antetokounmpo again going forward with his Bucks line. Am I correct? He's probable. Well, then I'm taking the Milwaukee Bucks +5. I think that's too many points. +5 against the Brooklyn Nets team that is without Kyrie Irving now because they're back home. I don't really understand this line then. Milwaukee is good. They just lost a game to a team that they would beat if they're fully healthy. Giannis comes back. Giannis obviously has a penchant for kicking the crap out of this team. He's taken a personal vendetta against them. I just don't think Brooklyn is that good of a basketball team. They have three amazing stars that you can close with, but Milwaukee is the best team in the East. I think that they care about games like this. If Giannis is playing in it, +5 is Milwaukee. I'm taking that for my Wake and Rake tonight.
Yeah, the other swing, though, they get Giannis back, but Drew Holiday entered protocol. So they lose Drew Holiday in that. Just something to keep in mind as you
remove. Yeah, remove. Drew Holiday's too important. I need the guy that's defending James Harden the entire game to be playing in this one. So no. And I don't even know who Milwaukee plays at point guard.
George Hill is out too. So
yeah, that's what I mean.
They don't have a lot of point guard.
No, remove. This is the worst part about this game. Chris, do you have a favorite bet for tonight?
No, not really. I just bet on the Hurricanes in regulation. There's not much going on, to be completely honest with you. But if it's a parlay, then the Hurricanes money line is something I'd be interested in.
Okay, Hurricanes money line. Flames on a back to back, right? They just lost to Tampa Bay because we just took them in a parlay. It was a day game, but still, I kind of like that too. Carolina's good. Flames are good. I like how I'm like, do you have a best bet? And you're like, yeah, I actually do. So you said you didn't, and then you did. That was a very weird way to frame it.
Hurricanes was my backup here if my top pick got taken. The reason I didn't want to make it my number one is I think it's probably the best value on the board tonight, but that would be 2 days in a row of picking on the Flames in my wake and rake pick, and I didn't want to beat that too much. So we'll lock in Hurricanes in the parlay for Quebec Chris. That leaves me with my other choice, which is Cavs -5 at Portland. The Cavs have cooled off in terms of against the spread, but Allen and Mobley are back now. Garland's back. They're expecting to get Chetty back tonight. Rondo's expected to debut tonight. And then on the Portland side, Dame Lillard, CJ McCollum, Larry Nance, all still out. Cavs -5. Anytime you're on the road on the West Coast, giving up 5 points is going to be a little bit tough. But I think this Cavs team's better than the Blazers team. The Blazers have hung in okay with Dame and CJ out because Anthony Simons has gone wild. I like the Cavs here, though. Their defense is really good, and they're getting a couple pieces back here. Both of these teams have really struggled against the spread lately, so something has to give, and I'm going back to the well with the Cavs -5.
Cavs -5. Okay.
So, JD, we need your replacement pick before we lock this in.
I got to tell you, I really don't like this pick at all, but the Atlanta Hawks are 4-10 against the spread in their last 14 games. I'm not sure who they have coming back in protocols. This is why I hate making this bet, and I hate the Lakers.
Well, I have it in front of me if you have any questions.
Well, is John Collins coming back in this game? Because
I don't have an answer for that. He's questionable.
Okay, so John Collins is the big swing piece here, but I'll take the Lakers, and I'll just take them to beat the Atlanta Hawks. I think the Atlanta Hawks suck, and yeah, Trae Young puts up stats, but I don't believe in him as a winner right now. That team is moribund. Clint Capella wants out of town so badly. He refuses to play defense. That's a team that gave up, I think, 140 points to a Portland Trailblazers team that was missing CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard. So yeah, lock me in for LeBron to beat that team. I think wins matter to the Lakers right now. I think LeBron takes care of business here. It's a short line. Give me LeBron over Trae Young. I'll just take the Lakers.
All right, we got Lakers money line, Hurricanes money line, Cavs -5, Raptors -11.5. Mm-hmm. That four leg wake and rake is +857 on CoolBet.
Ooh,
love it, absolutely love it.
Pay the rent, baby.
We should probably let CoolBet Chris go. CoolBet Chris, thanks so much, man, and great Hurricanes pick. I like that one a lot. And thanks for chipping in on the parlay.
All right, well, my pleasure. Let's get this. Have a great weekend, guys.
See you, bud.
All right. That was CoolBet Chris, national brand manager for CoolBet. That's the Wake and Rake.